from 35 years ago?
All right.
No, not that one.
I told you. Do you want to tell us about the interest rates that you had to pay on this farm?
How many times over did Pop have to pay an interest for this farm?
Did he tell you that?
Yes, he paid for it two or three times over. It cost basically over $12,000, and he paid that in interest several times over in the years that he lived on this farm. Right, in interest?
Yeah,
alone.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
How long did it take him to pay off the mortgage?
It was in the 40s, right, Mom?
Yeah,
Mom,
oh yeah, more positive, even later.
Yeah.
So, over 25 years?
Yeah, everybody goes, yeah.
To pay off the mortgage. It was a lot of hard work.
Yes.
The depression came in,
you see. The first year when it froze up all the bloomings from the peaches and apples.
So, the first year, you lost all the fruit from the orchard.
Yeah, the first year, the second year, was insects and was freezing. A lot of trouble, a hard week.
And Mom, the depression, it didn't pay to pick the apples, so you let them rot, and they were a foot deep on the ground, and the whole place smelled like apple cider. As the apples rotted, the whole neighborhood smelled of cider.
You remember that?
Yes, I can remember the odor right to this day. I can remember smelling apple cider for miles around, because it cost, for instance, 8 cents a bushel or a basket to pick the apples. And when he took them to the market, he only could get 7 cents. So it didn't pay him to pick them, so he let them rot. He let them fall off the trees and rot.
That's what Pop told you?
Yes, I can remember it.
He didn't even want to tell me to aggravate me. He did lots of things that he didn't tell me to aggravate me. I had to find out later from the children or from other people.
Do you drink apple cider?
Yes, I love it.
I thought maybe he wouldn't like it.
You know, talking about the apple cider, we had a neighbor, a few of them, they used to come and drink the cider. It was got so sour like vinegar, and they drink that. It was so crazy to drink this sour, terrible cider. He used to sell it in the barrels, the chambuses, the other
right.
People. And then one time we had a very bad luck. This was a heartbreaking thing. He sent away a truckload of peaches, not baskets, but the bushels.
Right.
First class, beautiful. He had to pay for spraying, he had to pay for picking, he had to pay for material, lots of money invested. And he sent away the truckload, it was so high, it reached pretty the point of the street. And what did he get back? 40 some cents.
What?
40 cents.
What happened?
The crook, the missionaries, the devils, they took away all the money, and that's what he sent it.
Oh, he sent the payment after he.
Yeah, after
he
was sending it there. Yeah.
He waited for the check, and then all that came was 43 cents.
Yeah, 43 and 46.
And who stole it?
The buyers.
The brokers.
The brokers, yeah.
In New York.
Yeah,
was this
New York,
Mom?
Yeah. Since then, my husband didn't send any more to New York. He just sold it when he used to go to Wilmington. He sold it here on the place. No more sending it away there.
He didn't trust them.
Of course
not. He just
not.
Sold it locally.
The only thing he didn't know, he was new and green about the business, he ought to go with him, with the trucker.
With a trucker?
Yeah, with a truck. Oh, sure.
And then years later, I can remember his going up with the truckloads of
produce. This was his own truck.
Right. Years later, he'd go up with truckloads. It would take six to 8 hours to get to New York, Mom?
No, he didn't go to New York. Yeah, one time he went to New York, he didn't pay.
Right.
But most of the time he went to Wilmington.
And Philadelphia?
Not to Philadelphia.
Wilmington?
Only Wilmington.
Anyway, I remember his going up and then coming back and being so exhausted.
Yeah.
And he was so overly tired that he couldn't sleep. Literally couldn't sleep. He was too
He had to get up.
Exhaustion.
He used to stop the truck with the apples and the fruit and the side and had to lay down or sit down and try sleeping. To those of otherwise he said he would have an accident. He couldn't drive anymore. Nobody was with him but by himself. Nobody would go with him at that time and he didn't want to bother any man. Then it cost a lot of money too. And it was a very hard way.
When did this farm begin to make money?
I don't know. When he made the last few years in the greenhouse work.
When he started in the greenhouse work,
yeah,
he started to make money.
That he planted himself the tomatoes, and he used to sell to the local stores here.
And was it? Did he do truck farming, all kinds of vegetable farming?
Yes, with the greenhouse produce.
Yeah, the most was tomatoes.
But there was, I remember one year he grew broccoli and cauliflower.
This was just for the family. Not for the stores, only tomatoes.
Well, cantaloupe and watermelon.
Right. But the most was the tomatoes. And we came in the oiliest. They started with $6, $7, $7, $8 a basket. It was oily, and I had to make it oily on account of the greenhouse. Then the other farmers came in, and they sold it for $1, $2. So it went down to nothing, so my husband started selling it to the cannery. Well, the cannery was 40, 50 cents a basket.
You asked the question about when did the farm start to pay off. I think it must have been right after the war, during the war. We also had a roadside market.
The road stand.
A few years after that, he sold some property. And with that property, he finally made the last payment of the farm. That was one way he got out of debt, finally, to sell some of the property for houses, for real estate.
By the lake there, by the edge of the lake.
Yeah, see, we were on a lake, the Andrews Lake, and it's a lovely section. And he sold some property there to finally make, I think, one of the last payments on the mortgage.
Where was Roadside Market? Would that be?
The Roadside Market was on U.S. 113 near Bowers Beach. And it was in a split. One road went into Dover. Actually, they both went into Dover. One went by the air base, and the other one went into Wyoming. Rising Sun. It was split. And he had a roadside market right there. The children would all help selling. I remember my kid brother spending the night watching the produce overnight.
That was this year.
Right, and we would gather up what we didn't have on our farm. He would go to neighbors and buy their produce and sell to the traffic that went to the resorts.
Yeah, they went to the oceans for
the weekend. It was a very excellent location.
And tell me about your children. What happened to all of them here? I mean, your sons and your daughter. Did they stay on the farm? Did they leave?
All of them stayed here.
Everyone stayed on the farm. Can you tell me what they're doing now, all of them?
Well,
they're doing.
They have all farms. One is my daughter, God bless her, with her husband. They have chickens.
Your daughter, her name is Frida.
Yeah, Frida, yeah.
And
that's the only one.
And she and her husband have a chicken farm.
Yeah.
I married a city boy. And he was an accountant bookkeeper from Philadelphia. And we went to the ladies' ready-to-wear business. And after a year with his uncle and aunt's lady ready-to-wear business in Miami Beach, or Miami, he was getting an eye problem called Selasians, that was growths on the eye. And the doctor said that he must get out of the store and into the open to become either a salesman or a farmer. I says, well, you married a farmer's daughter, let's go back to the farm. So we lived with mom and pop for about a year until we found our present home. We've lived there now for 29 and a half years. Now that's the story of our particular family. Now Ben, he's the oldest one.
You're the youngest?
No, I'm next to the youngest. Benny,
how old is Ben?
Benny is 62, Mom.
Sounds like it's 61, 62.
Or 61. He'll be 62 next year. At any rate, he bought the adjacent farm.
So this property?
Right.
Why did you say adjacent? Who's adjacent?
Next to. Next to. It's called adjacent.
May I ask a question? Did he buy the farm? Did he borrow the money from the Jewish Agricultural Society?
No. He got
this palm honey, bought it from his case.
Right, I know. But Pop loaned him some money, right? Pop started him on his way. He loaned him money.
Who loaned him money?
Pop.
Oh, Benny?
Yes. In the very beginning. Pop bought the farm, actually.
Yeah, he bought the farm for him.
Right.
Yeah.
And what does he raise?
He is right now a truck farmer and chickens. He has broilers and chickens. And, he also was a field serviceman. I don't know if you call a field serviceman, but he was a supervisor for Green Giant for many years. He was the supervisor over a large quantity of land. Now, I think Green Giant moved out of Delaware, and now he's doing that sort of work for himself. He has two sons. One is an entomologist, and mushroom growers up in Pennsylvania. The other son works in business near Washington, not connected with
farming. And they haven't gotten a family, not children.
They're married. Well, the older one is married.
They don't want to believe in it.
The next son is Solomon, and he was originally a teacher, then a principal, and now he is...
That's a big shot.
Superintendent of curriculum at Lake Forest School District. He lives on the farm, also adjacent to Mom.
Does he farm?
What do you mean adjacent? What's adjacent?
Next to. He doesn't do the farming himself. He rents. Actually, my youngest brother, farms his land and my mother's land, his own land. He was at one time even tilling our land.
He's not doing it this year.
Not this year.
So what are you going to do with it?
A neighbor is doing it. Anyway, he is really the big farmer. He tills, how many acres do you have here, Mom?
No, maybe 40.
Oh, don't you have more than that now? 50?
I don't know.
At any rate, originally it was 90. Saul's land is, I don't know how many acres Mom does Saul till.
He has more, 60 maybe.
50, 60, more than that, and his own acreage is 90 or 100 or so. And plus he has 40,000 chickens, so he's a busy boy.
You have a tremendous family, a family of whom you can be justly proud.
Well, Pop instilled the love of the land, the love of the soil, the farm, he's always said it wasn't a way of living, it was a way of life. And he instilled this love into all his children. And we have all remained on the farm, and we all live within 15 miles of Mom.
I think it's a beautiful story.
You know, honey, I want to tell you this. I think I have to give myself credit. They was leaving on this little farm there by the Shaitan side, you know, when you come here, where they live, the gentle people. What's their name, Sugars?
Right.
Oh, yeah. So. The brother comes over from the Mugajia's man. He was a lawyer from Dover.
What brother?
The Mugajia's brother, Mr. The lawyer. I forgot his name already. Somebody years ago, bought already away.
Satterfield?
No, Satterfield is the lawyer. So he comes over, and he was taking that lawyer had a lot of land, a lot of farms. And that brother took care on his, collected the money, took care of the brother's business for the farms. So he comes over and calls up and he said, he takes orders from his brother, the lawyer from Dover, that this farm, you know, Sal Martin's people was living there,
the people's going to move away
and another tenant's going to move in. So I heard it when he talked on the phone. And I gave it over to her. As soon as he came, Sally came home from his work, from school. I said, Sally, you go over to the lawyer and buy the farm. You have a deposit, whatever. Borrow some money, $100, $200.
He had just come out of the Army? Or was he still in the Army?
He was out of the Army. He had his wife and their child.
Right.
No,
he didn't have any children.
No. All right. Makes a difference. They had him out, but I told him to get this farm, was this farm where I need, and this farm where I live now. And he didn't want that the brother, he was the commissioner, he didn't want to sell. He got the profit from the interest. I said, you go right over to his brother, the lawyer, and buy the farm. Buy it, give him a deposit. So he did. He went over.
That's how he has his present farm.
Yeah, sure. I've got them both.
How many years now since? What?
I think this one is sold.
Since 1949
before,
or so.
Before, I think Mary was born already. Maybe a year or two. I don't remember. Yeah, it's quite a few years. And he did. And you know that man. After that, then came over to his brother and told him the farm is sold and you don't have to go there, and collect any money for rent. He got a heart attack. He died a day or two later. Well, maybe he had heart trouble before, but this aggravation finished him up.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean to kill the man. I just wanted.
Well, so your children have all remained Jewish.
Yes.
That's
so
very unusual.
And they all married Jewish mates.
And they all married Jewish women or men.
But one of my grandson, he married a Gentile, but she is a nice girl, and she likes the Jewish way of life. And she likes to eat the fish, gefilte fish. And she likes the synagogue. She likes to go to synagogue in Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. He doesn't imagine. He was born a Jewish boy. He had a bar mitzvah and everything. And she's a nice girl. I like
her. And all her grandsons were bar mitzvahed.
Yeah, sure.
And her own children were bar mitzvahed. Her father taught her two oldest two oldest boys to Hebrew enough so they could be bar mitzvahed. And who taught Itzi, my youngest brother? Who taught him?
Nobody.
But he was bar mitzvahed, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was bar mitzvahed, sure.
But who taught
him? My father.
Oh, your father taught
him
too? Your father taught Itzi?
I don't remember. Maybe it did, maybe not.
Was there ever a rabbi who came?
It was a rabbi in Dover. He used to go there.
A rabbi used to come to Dover?
Yes. So my papa used to take him to Dover once or twice a week. Whatever he could spare time to go.
Sit.
Yes, I do. I'd light the candles every Friday night. My father said to me, he said, you don't have to, if you feel like benching, put on the shmatkin on your head, and with your hands, you can do it.
If you feel like reciting the prayer before the candles, I have to think about the prayer.
Right.
And so then you can put something on your head before
as part of the ritual.
But if you don't want to, go ahead. What did he say?
Just the main thing is to light the candles.
All right.
Part of the tradition, right?
Yeah. Just
so
the main thing. My father was a religious man, and he was very educated in that Jewish religion, in Hebrew and everything. So he said, the main thing, you light the candles. You put on the cover on your head or not, but the main thing
is to light the candles.
Yeah. And the main thing, if you say the prayer or not the prayer, just light the candles.
So to this day, you still light the candles?
I light the candles, let the others to say prayers.
But your children have obviously maintained some of their Jewishness.
Yeah, they do light the candles. I don't know what they did. Sometimes she, how about you? You sometimes forget?
I light them every Friday night.
That's good. She sometimes forgets and sometimes she lights them too.
Friday.
Does your family get together often? Your family?
I don't know, not so often. I don't know how much
your children get together?
The cousins are fairly close.
Have you ever been sorry that you came on the farm?
Oh, that's a good question.
All right, have you ever been sorry that you came on the farm?
No.
Why?
I like the life, the country, the farm life.
Even though it was so hard?
Yes.
Wouldn't it have been easier if you lived in the city?
Probably it would be easier, but it's not as interesting and not as healthy, not as lovable, good as in the farm.
So
one thing about that I'm happy is all my children around me close to their father too. And they're still the old farmers, and they like that life too.
So you must have done something right.
I hope so.
You took in some people you mentioned to live with you.
Well, first let's talk about the niece and the nephew that you took in.
All right, let's talk about
Sarah.
Yeah, let's talk about all the people that you took in to live with you.
That was my niece when she was a baby. I took her out from home.
What kind of home?
An institution.
I know a home for children. Children's home.
Well, it's an institution.
Yeah.
Why was she in the institution?
It was in Brooklyn or the Bronx.
Was she an orphan?
No.
No, her mother was mentally retarded.
Not retarded. She had a problem, Mom. She wasn't retarded. She was a bright woman.
So what was the problem?
She was not fully adjusted or, what was the word? She wasn't mentally capable of raising children. But as far emotionally handicapped, I would say. She loved children, loved them dearly, but didn't have the background, the emotional background to raise them. And as long as my mother's mother was there in the house taking care of the children, they did all right. But then Mom's mother became bedridden and very ill. And she called Mom, my grandmother, called my mother, or wrote her and said, I beg of you, take these children because they are not, they will never be raised to be normal children. So Mom said, I can't. Things are very, very bad. And so Grandma called the authorities, and they came and they saw the atmosphere that these children were being raised in. And they took, at the time there were three children, took them away and put them into three different institutions.
These were siblings.
These, the youngest was three, and I think then six and about nine. Martin was nine, David was about six.
David wasn't in the home with the mother and father.
Right, yes.
Not David, Abby, I mean.
Abby wasn't born yet. Okay. So,
I think he was born.
No, he wasn't born at that time. Right. I don't continue to run away from the institution and come home, right?
Not from the institution, honey. The institution was very good. From his home, from his father.
Oh, he would run from his father?
From his father and from his mother, yeah.
And finally he was old enough to be taken into the service. The Second World War had started by that time.
Yes, he was in the service.
And he enlisted, right?
Yeah, then again he enlisted. That was the last story. And then he came to work for Mildred and Betty.
Yeah, for a while. And then the second one, David, you took because he would not adjust to the institution or the home. And Steve...
No, and it's not that it's
no.
Institute. They wanted him out. You see, my brother Charlie,
their father.
He's not so smart. He took him out. He started taking him out until he was to be registered out. He took him and tried to get him out from there, not to be there. He wanted to have their own home. So they found out the guard by the gate found it out and let know the people that took care of the home. I told Charlie never to come again here. If anybody can to see him, but not him, not the father. Because he wanted to sneak out his son without the register mark, with the permission from the home. So then my mother, and of course Charlie wanted we should go see him and take him to the farm. So we took him out with the permission to keep him on the farm, not to let the head of Charlie special.
And Sarah, the youngest, was three.
Wasn't even three, 2.5
wasn't,
years.
Wasn't, yeah, 2.5 or 3. And she was so emotionally upset by being taken away from her home that she cried round the clock. She cried in her sleep. She cried when she ate. She cried when she played with her toys. And we realized...
You really?
Yes,
she did?
Yes. And
I remember she was...
Finally, Grandma begged Mom to take her, realizing the child would be very emotionally hurt the rest of her life. So Mom consented. Grandma said she would help out with care packages, literally care packages. She would send food and as much money and assistance as she could to help. Because this was hard times. This was during the Depression or right after the Depression when things were very, very bad.
So and Rachel was very anxious. The mother was very anxious we should keep her. The child.
So we took Mom took both children, and it was during the summer when they arrived, and I remember Sarah sobbing. I'll never forget this three-year-old. She wasn't even trained yet, toilet trained. I took her upon myself to toilet train her and to give her as much love and attention as I possibly could.
That's
I
that
must
child.
Have been, what, 8 or 9 myself, or 10 or something.
Yeah.
He
was old enough to take care of her.
Right. I never left her for a second. We wandered through the farm hand in hand. I remember singing songs to her and telling her stories. And gradually, she stopped crying. And
she was crying when she was walking?
Constantly. She never stopped crying.
The tears was running out from her tears.
And finally, I noticed the sobs start. After a few days, the sobbing stopped. And I think she slept with me. I trained her. I trained her to keep clean. I trained her to wash. She sat with me at every meal, and she never left my side until school started. And then school started, and she was in a terrible state again. She realized that I was separating from her. She thought she was losing me. And then and she started to cling to Mom. She cling. Remember, Mom, she held on to your dress and your apron?
Yeah.
She didn't let you...
You know, when I was cooking and walking from the to the stove to the table, and she was holding on me, and she was so frightened. Why was she so frightened?
Because she thought she was going to be taken away from
We'll take her back to the home.
Right.
She was terribly upset
and
about
Mom
her.
Mom raised her until she was 18, when she went away to become a secretary and stenographer.
She started in Dover working.
Right, and then she went to Philadelphia, and then she went to Germany. Anyway, she married a chemist. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. She gave birth to twin boys also.
A gentleman.
She just happily remarried just this past May. She refers to Mom as Mom. And A.B., she took another child. Let's see now, what happened to David, Mom? Why couldn't you keep David?
Oh, David.
The second one.
He was terrible. Very, very, I didn't want him. You couldn't handle him. I remember he was here a few weeks or 2 months. It was a very bad winter day when they had to go to the bus, waiting for the bus.
School.
Yeah, 2 minutes. And I buttoned them up here by the neck. It shouldn't be so much open. And he didn't want it to open it up. I was afraid I'd get a cold. And I couldn't handle him. I couldn't. I said, he has to go back, either home or with his grandmother or mother. I wouldn't keep him for any money. It's impossible to help.
He developed rickets because he made up his mind he was not going to drink any milk. And the doctor said, you actually have to get that child to drink milk.
You remember that?
Yes, his head got extremely large in proportion to his body.
Yeah.
And his arms were very, very thin. And it was a form of rickets. And so my father, who was a very patient man, begged him, pleaded with him, ordered him. And finally, he got to the point where, and he refused each time. He kept his mouth chalked closed. Wouldn't even let a drop of milk go into his mouth. Finally, Pop threw up his arms, gave up, threw the glass of milk in his face and left. And he says, I cannot take any more of this.
Yeah, and threw the milk right on his face.
Right, and he went, and I think, what did he do, go back to his mother and father, Mom?
Yes, he went back to them, yeah.
They promised to take better care of him. Right?
No, the society or the company, whatever you call it, the home, didn't know that we... Send them back to their people. Otherwise, they wouldn't allow. They didn't want them. They wasn't able to take care of them. Impossible.
Yeah.
You know that Rachel was away most of the time. She believed the missionaries. She was going to the missionaries day and night all the time.
She was a Jewish woman.
Yeah.
And she was converted to Christianity.
Yeah.
By missionaries. And she was.
She was honest. She was educated.
She lost a baby in a bathtub.
Not in the bathtub.
A
no.
Pan. Pan of water, it drowned.
No.
Got pneumonia? What
happened
afterwards?
No, darling. She left, she went to her brother, and Charlie wanted her to leave by herself. She used to be with my mother. She should keep house for herself, for the family. So she left the baby on the washtub on the table, you know.
In a basin of water, right?
No water.
No,
what are you talking
about? In a basin?
With clothes. Covered up with the clothes, and had the baby diaper, and had the dress. Clothes on it, and they left the poor baby on the table. On the table, not in the water, no water. She didn't bother much with water. the poor baby cried and cried until it gave out and died.
How old was it, Mom?
A few months. Just a few months.
So then Mom took all the children into her and then.
Yeah, this was the baby was the youngest baby.
Yeah.
The other babies already was older. She could handle it. But Sarah and David and Martin was in a home. But Charlotte, he was in a very good home. But Charlotte took him out.
So then years later, after Sarah was mostly raised,
and she got
Martin
married,
was grown, and David
she
was
got
grown.
Married with a Gentile. And as soon as she got married, and a few months later, she began pregnant with the twins. She said...
This is Sarah, but
yeah.
I want to tell them about A.B. now.
A.B., oh,
The story about A.B. Mom took in another nephew. He was born several years after Sarah. The same thing started all over again. He was not being raised properly. And I guess who decided that he'd come to the farm?
Rachel wanted very much.
Oh, Rachel, the mother.
Yeah. And I want him. I like that boy. I like him much better than
you. So you took Avi when he was how old? 12?
12 years old.
Right.
He used to come every summer here for the summer vacation.
So you were used to him?
Oh, yeah, I loved him. He was a sweet little boy. He was sensible, standing.
Anyway, the story with Avi is that he continued after he was 12 years old. Mom took
and he
full
liked
care.
His sister. He wanted to be with Sarah here, too.
He took, yeah. Mom and Pop took full care of him. And he didn't do too well in school. And toward the end of his high school years, Pop said to him, Avi, look, what are you going to do with your future? You're not doing too well in school. What are you going to do? Don't you want to go to college? And Avi said, yes, I'd love to go to college. May I? Pop says, certainly, I'll see that you go to college.
No, you don't understand.
No, wasn't that the story?
Yes, yes. But Avi thought that Pop going to keep him on the farm, make him as a farmer.
Right.
So that's why he didn't care. So he said, why don't you learn good? What's the matter with you? The principal said, you're not doing any well. So good. He said, what does I have to do good? Why does I have to go to college? Are you going to keep me here on the farm? He thought that my father, my husband would keep him on the farm, be here as a farmer. And he didn't care for it. He didn't want to be on the farm. He didn't like the farm boy. So my husband said to him, no, who wants you on the farm? I don't want you. You get your education, you better do. And he changed so quick.
He became a great student.
Yes, that's right.
From then on, he was on the dean list constantly. He got he's graduated one of the tops in college. He went on for his master's in, got his master's in physics, and then his doctorate in mathematics.
Is he the one?
And he's now working for, doing research for the government in Washington. The Navy.
It's a beautiful story.
Sure is.
I made a minch out of him, me and my husband and him.
Now tell us about the other two that
I guess Juan did have too much. Ernest. Ernest and Teddy you're referring to?
Yes. Ernest is not my son.
I know, but you're talking about
the
farm.
The other young people.
She wants to know about the boys.
No, she wanted to know about Ernest and Teddy.
You raised.
Oh,
they were related to you.
Then I didn't raise Ernest.
Ernest came when he was 33 years old.
Yeah.
He stayed here for exactly 33 years and died. He was supposed to have died within a few years, the doctor told him, told Mom and Pop, when Mom and Pop took Ernest, who was a schizophrenic, that the doctor's diagnosis was that he was not going to live very long. And he was a harmless schizophrenic, otherwise, of course, Mom and Pop would not have taken him.
What was it?
He was harmless.
Oh, yeah, how much?
He was a beloved man. He was an intelligent man, extremely intelligent man. He was a cultured man.
He loved her very much.
He took us, I was a young child, and so was my kid brother. And whenever we had difficulty in school, he was so patient. He would spend hours with me, helping me with my math or anything else that I needed. He knew all the classics. Classical music to the time where he became insane. He was a bookkeeper, an accountant. He had hundreds of people working under him, and his mind suddenly gave
He got a nervous breakdown.
Anyway, he bathed us. When Mom, you would go and leave us with him in charge. And I'll never forget one night him putting Itzy and I in a bathtub.
Upstairs?
Yes, and bathing us and putting us to bed. And he walks in the woods and talk about every bird that he ever saw and every tree. Animals had an instinctive love for him. They would come to him as if they were one of them, as if they were, they spoke a language all his own.
He went to do it. You never told me this.
Oh, yes. And he did this with our children in later years when I had children. He would take them by the hand and take them for walks in the woods. Talk about the birds and the animals and the trees, etc. He was a beloved man, but he would get these spells in which he became completely uncontrollable. I mean, Pop would end up having to shake him to bring him back to any normalcy, but he was harmless. He was a lovely man. He wrote the most fantastic letters for my mother. He was almost like private secretary.
Yeah.
His writing was just
like print, like not human hand.
Calligraphy.
Yes, my brother was the same thing.
Yes.
All right, now then how about Teddy?
Teddy? Mom, you tell me that his grandfather found Pop on the roadside market and asked him if he would take him. And the grandfather died, and then the grandmother, and then the father was in charge of him. And then the father died, and then his brother.
In a car accident.
Right, and then the brothers finally took over the thing that Teddy was taking care of, and then they finally left Mom and Pop in complete charge of Teddy. And they haven't seen him in years, right?
Family doesn't, the boys here, for years and years, none of them has a brother, uncles, and aunts, and cousins.
And
none of them
contact.
Never come. In the beginning, they came wondering how we can keep him, how he's here, take care of him. And after that, the father used to come, but his grandmother used to come, the grandfather were together, but they passed away, they got old and they died. And so the father had an accident and he got killed and died.
So this is Mom's life on the farm, with lugging the buckets of water to cook and clean and working with a wood stove and handling the wood by herself to cook.
I remember one time I went to wash my clothes for the pump. It was winter time. The water was warm, you know, according to the sink water. Then when I wringed it out and was ready to hang it out, it was frozen. I couldn't hang it out.
Stiff as a board.
There
were many tales of
the sand kids.
I can remember them taking clothes off the line when they were frozen.
Yeah.
Pop was strictly a greenhorn with many, many things. And in those days they used kerosene lamps, kerosene lights, no electricity. And one time they ran out of kerosene, and Pop happened to have some gasoline around, and not knowing the danger of gasoline,
That's right, I remember. They didn't have no kerosene. They had to put the kerosene in the lamps and the lanterns. What else are lamps?
Lanterns
to go into the stable to take care of the cows, see how she is, the horses. So they put in gasoline in there. One time put in gasoline, even a lamp and even the lantern. I said, don't put no. It's only for kerosene, not for gasoline. He said, what's the difference? The little boy, it's all right. And it started burning.
Exploded.
And it burned on his hand. It caught fire on his hand. He was that time with his brother, I think, Benny was there.
What was the worst thing that ever happened while you were living on the farm?
Well, that was one of the worst things. That plus we've had a series of fires in barns. Teddy one day took a lantern, and obviously the cow knocked over the lantern, and the barn went up in
not lantern, money to that stupid idiot, that Teddy. It was in the hayloft, just fresh, and it was dark, and he had matches with him, and lit a match, and it burned his fingers. He dropped it in the hayloft, in the hay, and the hay burned up, the stable burned up, the barn. All the firemen came from Felton, from Frederica, from Harrington, from everywhere.
Yeah.
I was afraid they shouldn't get to the greenhouse. The window was going
to
that
our
direction.
House too. Pop and Saw were away at the time.
Pop was away in the city.
In New York, right, with Saw. He was in New York.
I don't think
during the Second World War, and he was going overseas, and Pop went up to see him off. So my kid brother and my oldest brother were here, and they ran to the house. They woke. This was 5 or 6 in the morning. And it was an unusually bright morning because of a fire. They didn't understand what was happening. And something woke my kid brother. And he put his, he looked out and he saw the whole barn up in flames. And he ran out screaming to us to call the fire company. And Mom didn't know what to do. And I ran downstairs. I was ill. I think I
was home. I knew what
anyway,
to do.
I called the fire company.
I was pumping water and tried to stop the fire. Pumping with buckets of water to throw on the fire.
Anyway, we called the fire company. They called another
fire. For about 3 towns.
And we have a gasoline pump right opposite, and they were afraid that would explode.
Oh, there was white like beavers to stop the fire.
It went up in flames. They had all the machinery there, and my kid brother went in to get the machinery out. The last piece of machinery that he pulled out was so close to the flames that all his eyebrows burned off.
Were singed.
Then they had to get the animals out first, of course. And,
I can remember. Oh, you mean
the horses
the horse,
and the cows.
Yeah.
And horses and cows, especially horses, have a...
They, instead of go out, they go into the fire.
I don't know what it is. something in their system that draws them to planes.
They all,
so
all
they
animals
no sooner get out of the barn.
Then they go back.
They go back in, and so they'd have to leave the barn door open to get the cows out. They turn around, the horse was back in, and it took so long to get all the animals out.
They go right, they go then, right, they get so scared.
Yeah.
They run right to the fire. So that's a terrible thing.
I can see where that was a bad thing.
Well, I certainly do feel as though your life has been very full, and we thank you very much for sharing it with us.
Yeah, thank you.
We have enjoyed it immensely. Let me ask you a question. This doesn't have to be
a... Before we leave, I think you should tell us, had your husband been ill? Did he...
He wasn't ill. He just had the...
He had three heart attacks.
This was his fourth heart attack that killed him.
And did he take care of himself?
Mama?
It's a very interesting story. He refused to follow doctor's instructions. He felt that he could go on and on. He was a very active man to the very last day of his life. He saw all four of his children. He visited Farm and Field Day in the substation in Georgetown. They had the annual Farm and Field Day.
He was in Israel twice.
He picked tomatoes that day and hauled them to the roadside market. He was active to the very last, and it was, to this day, we all...
This was a short heart attack. How many heart attacks can a person have? He
but
didn't take care of himself.
How long ago was this that he passed away?
It'll be 6 years next month.
6 years ago, I thought it was more.
And you say he had been in Israel twice?
Yeah.
He was a most unusual man.
His brother, and his sister, and cousins, and aunts, and a big family.
Once you met him, you were to love him, to really be taken by his personality.
This is when he was a young man with me, took the picture. Well, this is too late, too many.
Here is a picture I'm going to show you.
You see this picture? I don't think you did. This is Mr. and Mrs. Blackwood.
You recognize that?